Oh, wait. Welcome back to the Atlantic Hour.
Welcome, welcome.
I'm James.
Me
is Eva. And Tom.
Tom, I'm back.
Yay.
Every week.
And what a week it has been. We are going to be doing something different today. So we thought we would break down a issue which has been in the headlines all week, and that is the continuing developments over the Russia-Ukraine conflict. We're going to follow a more of an explainer format this week, where we discuss the past 100 years of the history between the two nations and what this now means for international diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts before we kick off?
No, that was a very good summary of what we're going to be talking about. Hopefully we can cover the 100 years of history. Yeah, no, it's good.
We've got three history majors here, so...
We're not Russian history. Yeah.
I thought you dabbled.
I dabbled. I did Russian history A-level.
There you go.
That was in my prime.
And you speak a bit of Russian.
Do I? Привет. I think that means hello.
Great. So let's talk about the USSR.
Yes, okay, USSR. What do you want to discuss?
So if we rewind 100 years, it's 1925.
That's Russia.
Yeah, we're just after. The USSR has been created. The USSR has been created at this point.
Yeah,
we're in 1925. It's a lot smaller than it became.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is Lenin still alive?
No.
No, Lenin is dead.
And Stalin. Yeah, Stalin's rising. Stalin's basically killing all of the ex-party members from Lenin's party. Mm.
So there's an event I want to touch on that is rather seminal in this period of history. Called the Holodomor, where Stalin deliberately starved a large portion of the state of Ukraine within the USSR.
Yeah.
And that led to the famine of millions of people. Ukraine was
Ukrainian famine
prior
people,
known as the breadbasket of the USSR, mainly because it was famed for its agricultural production and export across the globe. For different grains and dairy products like milk. And the Ukrainian population was also a cultural epicenter of the USSR. Back when Russian and Belarusian states were being created. Kiev was like the original settlement of the population, which we now know today as Russians. So it also has some cultural importance to Russia, which may, when we go into the latter part of the episode, explain why Putin feels some kind of designation over Ukraine and Kiev, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
So that is 1925. Fast forward to the Second World War.
Yeah.
And Ukraine was overtaken by Nazi Germany in 1941.
Operation Barbarossa.
And the country remained under German occupation until 1944, when the Russian army removed
They
the Nazis from Ukraine.
Removed is a nice word.
Yeah, I like the removed is like very like calm and gentle. They just, you know.
And the state of the Soviet Union was reunified after that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even got a little bit bigger.
Like, yeah, got yeah, a little bigger. It's expanding. Basically, the whole after World War II, Stalin wanted to expand the Eastern Europe sphere of influence, much to the dismay of the US and the UK. And that was basically the like kind of centerpiece of many negotiations, such as like the Yalta Conference. Mm. And the reason why Western democracies feared this is because they feared the spread of communism into Eastern Europe, especially if there's going to be another war with Germany. So, whole point, basically, since the 19th century, but particularly it came to head in the mid-20th century, USSR/Russia, which it would later become, it's basically just been power hungry for these Eastern European countries, including the Baltic states like Latvia, Lithuania, etc. Not only because they think that they are part of Russia and that they don't have that like independence, which a lot of people in like Ukraine think they deserve, but also because they see it as like a security measure and they're just like expanding their borders.
Yeah, well, one major problem with Russia that they and I obviously World War II identified is that the capital is too close,
yeah,
and that's another reason why Putin will be trying to, you know, move the borders further and further away, because that was the main sort of security problem that was identified with Russia during World War II.
Yeah,
right. So let's pause here and look at the relationship between the two countries. Is it strong at this point?
Well, yes, they were one and the same country.
They were forever together.
Okay.
But no, because a lot of the people in...
Yeah, the people, no.
The people in Ukraine. Actually, it's interesting, when Germany invaded the USSR, a lot of Ukrainians sided with the Germans.
Really?
Yeah, because they did not recognise themselves as Russians, and they thought that siding with Germany, they would be able to gain some independence. And that's what kind of like amped Stalin's kind of motivation to like secure their borders within Ukraine, because they feared an uprising. Dun dun dun.
That will never happen.
Yeah, that'll never happen. Yeah. So yeah, it's just like a constant kind of leitmotif of Ukrainians not wanting to be under Russian control. You know, autonomy, which, you know, we can link back to Trump, but we won't talk about the US. But yeah.
All right, so let's do a bit of fasting forward. Ukraine is building up its infrastructure within the Soviet Union. Obviously, they had to recover from the casualties of the Second World War.
Yeah, there were 26 million casualties within the USSR.
Shocking. They were gifted Crimea in 1954.
That's nice.
Which obviously became the source of a lot of controversy later on.
2014, golden year.
Yeah.
And they reached pre-war levels of agricultural production again in the 1960s. And then I just want to check who was the leader of the Soviet Union
Khrushchev.
At that time. Yeah.
He's got a lot of H's in his name. Basically, Stalin had implemented these horrific five-year plans, which basically just increased industrial production massively. But it actually didn't as much as he said they did. But under Khrushchev, he kind of...
Plan,
yeah, he managed to kind of do things that Stalin hadn't done, but that also sort of meant kind of getting rid of the isolationist policy and kind of adopting Western style strategies.
Yuck.
Ew. How dare he?
And that's why they got rid of him.
Yeah.
Um, Then we go into the 1980s and the Chernobyl nuclear reactor accident. Obviously, one of two...
Accident, disaster, I would say.
Major reactor malfunctions in history, the other being Fukushima in 2011. A signifier, likely, of the breakup of the Soviet Union. The fact that, as we have said, it wasn't able to contain these expansive borders anymore. It was antiquated in the wake of a new world order that was forming at the end of the Cold War. And this was also indicative in the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989.
1991,
no? We all do history.
I thought it was 1991. I could be so wrong. Oh, sorry, my bad. Oh, no, sorry, the fall of the USSR was 1991. My bad.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
So, let's talk about the birth of Mother Russia.
Jesus, okay. Yeah, that lovely. Was in 1991. That was in 1991.
A lovely man called Boris came along.
Yeah.
Go on,
Tom.
He held some elections and he made him... So, the USSR falls. Obviously, Russian state had been financing or subsidizing most of the USSR for its time. So Russia becomes a country, its own country, elects this man called Boris Yeltsin, and it's immediately in economic crisis because it's been subsidizing governments for so long, and they're never getting that money back. They're not getting the products of Ukraine, for example. Mm-hmm. Back, so it has a financial crisis. It does fine, it does recover. It's such a huge country, it's quite difficult for it not to, but obviously never to the scale that it goes back to. And
And at this point Ukraine is independent. It's granted independence on Christmas Day 1991. Nice Christmas present. So obviously Russia's losing its key sphere of influence in Eastern Europe.
I'm just going to check when Ukraine became an independent nation state.
We don't trust either on this podcast.
It's 1991. It might not be, but I'm pretty sure it is.
There we go. So...
He didn't trust me.
We've done the history.
Yeah.
What does this mean for the current conflict in Ukraine?
It's a long time coming, and it's not the first time. I just got really angry. Not the first time there's been conflict. Like, it's just a history of tension between the two countries. Mm.
There's sort of a setup, sort of like, you know, Russia wants to expand its borders, protect its capital.
Let's play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay.
Devil's advocate for Putin.
And ask ourselves, would it be a good thing if Russia took over Ukraine?
Well, for who? For Russia, brilliant.
Yeah. For America, maybe.
Oh. For Ukraine, not so good. Me so good.
Surely Ukraine would have access to a lot more resources.
Yes, but it would also be, it wouldn't be autonomous, an autonomous region.
Like, well, there's argument that Ukraine still has a lot of the cultural ties that bind with Russia anyway.
Yeah, but you can say that about any country that shares cultural similarities, like Switzerland and France, like Germany and Austria.
Mm.
You know, like, I mean, if we're following that logic, then let's just bound all of Europe together.
America is trying to reignite the Age of Empires anyway.
Oh, just bind Mexico, US and Canada
if
together.
If they can take Greenland, it's only a few steps to Denmark, and then they'll be right in the door.
But the
Europe.
Issue with that is geography, because there's a massive sea in between the US and Denmark. So it's harder.
Quite a few countries.
Yeah, it's not just like...
Is the Age of Empire dead?
Yes.
Mm. I think the Age of Empire. I think. Oh,
all world.
I think the Age of Empire and what we like associate it with in like terms of like the British Empire, specifically like how we all thought that was okay, and how that was normalized. That's over.
I think just as with the Industrial Revolution, there's a series of nations which haven't had the same history of empire that Europe has, and are trying to flex some kind of
this is exactly how World War II starts with James and World War One. Is Germany going, are we
in World War III? Is the question.
Are Germany going, we're a bit late to the parade here, can we have some tiny islands in the Pacific?
To be fair, well, Germany is getting its defence back. So, AFD election on Sunday.
What about China?
Go out and vote for your local AFD candidate.
Yeah, go vote for AFD. Don't, please.
Elon told us to.
Yeah,
Elon paid me millions to say
that. Elon's 13th child.
If they take Taiwan, would that be...
Oh, China, we're going to China now. Okay.
No, but it's the state. It's not an empire. China taking Taiwan isn't establishing an empire. The same way Russia taking Ukraine isn't establishing an empire.
Yeah, that's just expanding borders.
Exactly.
Although, what's the difference?
They've both been part of China.
I think it's like how we took India.
Yeah,
like, so that's nothing
that
to do with.
Is for the UK to take India.
No, we're saying
that's
it's
not what I said.
We're saying it's a similar, but it's not a similar thing because it's too far away.
What I'm saying is it's not similar.
It's like if Germany. No, I don't know how it really works.
It's like if Germany took like South Africa, like.
No, it's just like. Something that gives, like, if France took Belgium or something like that, it's a country that has close, or the Netherlands took Belgium, probably a better example. Sort of close,
so you're
sort
saying
of cultural. It's
not
like
it's
that's not establishing an empire.
Yeah,
that's
I
also
agree with that.
Absorbing a country near you. That, like,
yeah,
it's like they've been part of the same.
What about the US making Canada its 51st state?
That's I think
expansion.
It has to be. Yes, I think it's not across
the
borders.
Canada is a completely autonomous country.
But it does have a connection to the US. What I'm saying is, like, if I don't know, the UK was to take. It's like how the UK took India. Like, there was no cultural connections between the two, but we saw trade links. And we took them, you know. It's not like, as you said, the Netherlands taking Belgium.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think it'd be maybe more of like if Mexico retook Texas or something like that.
Yeah, that would be wild.
Because you've got to remember with the United States, like the United States is the bit it's the bit that's grown. Like,
well, that's just,
like Canada and
Mexico.
Mexico
and old Mexico, like.
Canada and Mexico have both had more of America than America's ever had of either of them.
Mm.
If that makes sense, like.
Mm.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. Yeah.
Mexico used to go up to Louisiana and Texas. Canada used to sort of come down into New England. Like.
Yeah. So
like America, that's the reason why America pushing back is not that like expanding as countries used to own is fine.
So are you saying like expanding borders isn't establishing an empire?
I'd say if America took Canada, that's trying to establish an empire.
Okay,
because
fine.
There's no, obviously they'd speak English. But like they have two very distinct cultures.
Mm.
They've never, apart from like little bits, especially with Canada, like Mexico's a little bit different. But like they've never really been a country, apart from some of the bits used to be colonies of England. But again, they were separate.
Okay.
I feel like that is except like Greenland definitely
empire
building.
Yeah.
Gaza definitely empire building.
Oh, yeah.
Why do we think Trump has shut Europe out of this deal?
He wants to sanction them.
Because he also, you know, yeah. I also think he has more in common. He sees himself
in
common with Putin than with Europe.
I think
also he does,
drawing
again,
these two tangential
to
strands together, then, there is something important that we're discussing, which is he sees himself more aligned to someone with authoritarian tendencies who still believes in the Age of Empires than with Europe, who's sought to move beyond this.
But he also wants to... Again, as we always discuss, he wants to be the president who ends the war, and he doesn't. He wants to be seen as the person who does that, like the global leader who does that by himself, by going to Putin and making these negotiations.
Right, but he still wants Europe to fund it.
But also
well, yeah,
if I was American president, just to play devil advocate for Trump, why would I invite like the major European leaders? France and Germany are both in kind of disarray. He's having fine with the UK every other week, like. Why would he invite any major European leaders to come to this thing? Like, it's not like his first Courtesy is
not a word in Trump's dictionary.
Well, if you're the president of the United States, diplomacy is part of your job.
Yeah, but not for Trump.
But it's not like his first term where, like, Macron was very established, Merkel was there, it was Boris Johnson who he liked.
Europe's kind of...
Like, it's...
In disarray.
It's like, it's not... I wouldn't take half these people.
But like, I
take Keir Starmer because he's like, he's a very established politician now.
Mm-hmm.
But and maybe Macron, but like you wouldn't take the German leader, and obviously, and the German leader is probably the most important one. Like if you wanted to have like, if you were like, I need the most important people to this, you'd wait and do it when Germany has a president or prime minister, or a chancellor.
Even. There's also more of a chance he'd get what he wants out of the deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, you'd have. All these European
like, it sounds like what he's basically going is that we'll give Russia the states that they want, maybe a little bit more, and then Ukraine will pay us back in minerals.
Mm. Which Zelensky has rejected.
But it doesn't really matter because, like, this is how. I mean, we talk about the Age of Empires. This is how empire. This is how the Sudetenland was given out. The Czechoslovakia weren't at the conference.
Mm.
Germany went, "Can we please have this bit? There's lots of Germans in it," and we went, "Fine, if you promise that's the last bit." Like. This is like, ultimately, Ukraine might not have a choice.
I think this is a turning point for Europe then, because ultimately, how many more times are you going to let America do what it wants and have no say in something that is actually within your jurisdiction?
When America stops paying for it, which is soon.
Yeah.
If you know, this is might be the last massive American-funded war for a while.
Like, and then there's NATO.
Would they be in NATO?
Yeah.
They create this. The irony, they created NATO and now they want to leave it.
Yeah, but it's a very different country when they created NATO.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the next. It was only 30 years ago.
Right, but different presidencies.
That is true. It was upkept under.
I mean, America is indeed different than it was.
Churchill created the European Court of Human Rights. Yeah. You want to get out of that.
So you know, ever changing.
Exactly.
I don't think you can kind of predict this. Like, I don't think we can look back at history and make connections as. I don't know. I think.
I think Trump just wants to disconnect from.
Yeah.
This kind of diplomacy aspect of the presidency.
Yeah.
He's doing quite a lot of it for someone who wants to disconnect from it. He's barely in America.
I mean, is he? He's not at Saudi Arabia, he's back in Mar-a-Lago.
Well, look.
Yeah.
Wait, which Mar-a-Lago?
The one in Gaza. I'm going next week. Because there are two now.
Disneyland, Gaza.
Yeah, for real.
Why don't we do that? That sounds so much more fun than war in Gaza.
Let's not make any more predictions on this podcast.
Just because mine come true.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah, I don't know. I think if you want to talk about the US mineral aspect, I also think a lot of it comes down to the fact that Zelensky has also rejected any.
But Zelensky's not going to get what he wants, is it?
I'm just thinking, what if Europe backed Zelensky, though? And they obviously will. Like, how would they go about it?
But America offers, I think it's like $50 billion a year, which no one the European Union can afford, but they'll have to take away from other subsidies they give out across Europe that help.
It's more a case of Trump speaks and the rest of the world listens. So, the fact that most European nations had said there wasn't going to be a deal where the borders of Ukraine were redrawn, now they're admitting that that won't be realistic.
But that was never realistic.
Yeah.
I never thought that that was true.
It's more a case of the fact that Trump said it, manifested it within the space of a month. As you said, for someone who's not in this role at all, they still want to have control. That's the dichotomy.
Yeah, but they don't have control. They want control over this one. Like, they've put what?
I think there are going to be big things that happen in the next 4 years, which America is going to have a vested interest in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's almost like that bully on the school playground who's like, "If you give me money this one time, I won't do this ever again."
Yeah.
And you know, but Trump's not
saying, Trump's not saying he'll never do it again.
He is, exactly. He's giving Ukraine a deal where he's going to take all their minerals for absolutely nothing.
I know. Well, he's going to like rid off the $13 billion debt he's in. Is that what it is? Yeah, 13. Trump said that the U.S. was owed $500 billion worth of Ukraine's resources in exchange for helping the war effort.
Jesus.
Blackmail.
But do you think? What do you think realistically Ukraine could have hoped to get? Like the best case scenario, what were Ukraine ever going to get from this? Like those two regions were probably gone the moment Russia invaded them.
Mm-hmm.
The war is sort of at a stalemate, but Russia is winning.
Russia is winning. Well, I think it was unrealistic to expect a return to NATO's borders, like the previous borders.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And also, like, the invasion into Russia has sort of gone nowhere, yeah, and really was a media headline for 2 days.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the EU has imposed sanctions, but I'm not sure that's really going to do anything.
Mm.
I think it's difficult because you're standing up against Putin and you're basically standing up against Trump. Putin's not going to really back down.
I think that is a good place to bring the conversation. Is there any world leader who could feasibly stand up against Trump right now?
Probably not.
No.
I think that's... concerning indictment for the state of the world.
But you have to, like, be... like, America's the richest country in the world. And, like, at the end of the day, like, that has so much, like, hold. Like, that's got, like, the most importance. So, like...
Will America still be the richest country in the world at the end of the century?
At the end of the century? What, in...
China, India. I mean, India
maybe
could.
China, I don't know.
But like China was projected to overtake America. China's projected to take over America every year, but their economy keeps stalling.
Mm.
So if China, like if China and India can obviously modernize more, mobilize.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're doing it. Like, you know, they're in all the same sectors that America's in.
It depends what Trump does with the economy, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm.
If they go full isolationist, China probably will be the number one economy in the world by probably the end of the decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
Trump's not going to like that.
The stark irony here, though, is that what makes America unique is the net immigration to the country from all over the world that's giving them the biggest talent pool. And that's the very faucet he wants to turn on.
Yeah, is that what makes America unique?
I mean, like, do you think there's going to be like major exodus of people in high skilled jobs into China in the next half century?
America pay enough that anyone also who wants
languages.
To come. Yeah,
That's why you have to start learning Mandarin.
Start learning Mandarin, guys. You'll get a lot of jobs, and Russian get a lot of jobs, and Ukrainian probably. The three of the hardest languages to learn.
Giving people minerals.
Yeah.
Minerals. True. Actually, my friend is studying Russian at Yale.
How's he doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Mm.
Russian's a cool language, guys. Very difficult to read.
Yeah, funny looks when you say you're studying it these days.
Right? Yeah, true.
Also, shoulder taps from the.
Am I pushing your head?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you do it at Oxford. Oh, sorry, did I do that? I'm so sorry. Sorry, I just pushed James's chair down by accident. Oopsie.
Brought him off his
head.
I didn't realize how high up you were.
Yeah, I know. It's like Trump trying to push you down.
Right, so where does that leave us?
Right now?
Yes.
Well, I don't think Zelensky's going to be happy with the deal, and I think he might...
Oh, I don't think the deal's going to go through, though.
Who's going to block it? Do you think Ukraine have any power to block this deal?
I think Europe does. I know it's disintegrated.
No, but I think the European Union is a very powerful organisation.
Yeah, and I do think... I don't think the US
but
is,
are
like...
they going to openly oppose America right now?
No.
I think it depends what the deal comes to.
Depends how much Putin gets from the deal.
I don't think they're going to go down without a fight.
This is what I just thought. Could you see Europe going like, oh, don't worry, Ukraine, we'll just give them the money. I feel like that could be enough.
Give Ukraine the money.
The EU would help pay America back for them or something like that.
I think there's a tendency to be hyperbolic in the media. Although,
but the question is, like, how much power do you think Europe have to stop this deal? I agree that they probably do have the power to stop it, but will they want to? Will they want, like, the thing is, Donald Trump's going to say he's going to put sanctions on the EU anyway. So do they just preempt it?
Well, the EU's put Russians on sanctions on Russia.
Yeah,
it's like a trade war.
Russia's still not in the Olympics. Yeah, but that's taught them a lesson. They're not in the Olympics.
Yeah. Not allowed to have their flag on Formula One cars either.
They are.
Well, but then they just put it anyway, and no one cares.
Story of the country.
But the EU and the US are about to go into a trade war.
Yeah.
Just bite the bullet now. Go, look, this is our stand. We've been funding this war just as much as you.
I think Trump likes it when other world leaders show strength.
I think there have been talks about changing the economic budgets to increase percentage of defence funding in Europe. So I don't think they're going down without a fight.
That's not a great thing, though, is it?
Yeah, but they're not going down without a fight. I don't think they're just going to... I think there is going to be some resistance.
There'll be resistance, but will it be enough? But also, like, the UK's put quite a lot of money into Ukraine. Like, if America's getting minerals. Yeah, I want some of those minerals.
They want some, yeah.
And then Germany's put in twice as much as the UK have. But
Germany's about to go down a rocky path.
Poland's, you know, given like 15% of its budget to funding Ukraine. They need some minerals. Like, this is the problem when one person...
It's carving up Ukraine.
Like, and realistically, who gets left with the... Not the burden, but the, you know... Because there's no US aid anymore. Who gets put with sort of the task of, like, helping rebuild Ukraine?
FCDO, I don't know.
You know, it's the EU and it's UK. It's, like, it's European countries. Trump doesn't want to build a Mar-a-Lago Ukraine, unfortunately.
Disneyland Ukraine.
I think that's a good place to end it for this episode. We will watch this space on the continuing developments with the conflict. And we will be back next week to talk about some more global politics. Thank you very much for listening, guys, and have a good week.